Hi, today is January 12th, 2021, and welcome to the Diamond Hands podcast. I'm Goldie, and today's episode will be, what is the stock market? What are stocks? What are ETFs? And why do you care? Before I really get started, just a standard disclaimer. Everything that I say in the show is my personal opinion and should not be considered professional or personal financial advice. This episode is not meant to replace Econ 101 in university. It's not meant to be everything that there is to know about the stock market and how it works. But what I am trying to achieve with this is to just give a general layman's broad view of the basics of how the stock market works so that if you decide to get started and start investing in the stock market and investing in equities or investing in ETFs, then you'll actually have a bit of an idea of why they're behaving the way that they are, as well as what you're even getting into. So I really want to take the time to do a bit of an overview of how the stock market actually works and what stocks and ETFs actually are. I think it's really important for anybody who's interested in investing to really know what they're getting themselves into, because by doing so, you're going to be able to make educated decisions and you're not going to just freak out and panic sell if the market goes down. And so I guess the logical place for me to start this is, if it's called the stock market, I'll begin by defining what a stock even is. It's not just a magical thing that you buy and then it grows into more money. It's actually a security that represents fractional ownership of a company. Now, not all companies offer stocks on the public markets. For instance, Red Bull is not publicly available on any stock market right now, which means that if you wanted to get part ownership of the company, you would need to find somebody who privately owns the company, reach out to them individually, or reach out to their assistant, because I assume that they're probably some bigwig, and try to broker a deal one-on-one with them. And so when I say that the shares that you own, so an individual stock is a stock, and then multiple stocks are called shares. When I say that the shares that you own entitle you to a part of the company's earnings or a part of their equity, what I mean by that is if you owned some of, let's say hypothetically, Microsoft has issued a total of 1,000 shares. If you own 100 shares of Microsoft, then you would, as a result, be entitled to 10% of Microsoft's equity and assets. And that, in the real world, would get you a lot of money. In addition to this, stock ownership also allows the investor to have a say in how the company operates. So you're able to actually take part in votes and make decisions or vote on decisions for the company's future and their decision making. For instance, if you own, let's go back to Microsoft again. If you own shares of Microsoft, you'll be getting letters in the mail like every 3 or 4 months saying, hey, we've got this new person, this new spot open for the board of directors. Do you want to vote for who you like best? And it's totally optional as a stockholder if you want to vote for it, but you do have the opportunity to have a say in how the company conducts its business, which is kind of cool, really, to just be like a regular dude walking the street or a regular lady walking the street, but having a bit of a voice in how some of the world's biggest companies operate. And I don't know, I just get stoked by that. But it is important to note that stockholders don't own the company itself. They own shares issued by the company. And this gives a degree of legal separation. So I can't just walk into the Apple store and take one of their desks and bring it home with me, like those desks where they have all the iPads and the MacBooks and stuff on them. I can't just walk in and take that because it's company property and I own part of the company, so I can take this desk. It's not such a literal representation as that. They'll pay out the earnings and they'll pay out their equity through dividends every quarter, or they'll reinvest them into the company. And that depends. For instance, again, Apple and Microsoft both pay quarterly dividends. Amazon doesn't. They reinvest all of their profits that they make. This degree of legal separation also means that if Apple were to go bankrupt and I was an Apple shareholder, then the judge who deals with their bankruptcy proceedings isn't going to go after my house because I don't actually own the company of Apple. I just own the shares of Apple. So there is a degree of protection on both ends. Now, an ETF is very similar to a stock, except instead of having fractional ownership of a single company, ETFs will give the owner or the investor fractional ownership of a bunch of stocks or other assets. In my experience, these assets are usually stocks, but they can also be bonds. ETFs usually track a market index like the S&P 500 or the NASDAQ. Little note, S&P is spelt S, and P. It uses the ampersand sign rather than SNP. I remember trying to find SNP and Googling that for a long time when I first heard about the S&P 500, trying to figure out what it was. And I spent about 15, 20 minutes searching the wrong thing. Anyways, the two ETFs that I personally own track the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ 100. The S&P 500 is the 500 largest companies traded in the US by market cap, or the largest by current size valuation, how much the company costs if you were to add all of its shares together and determine the cost of all of those shares combined. And the NASDAQ 100 is the 100 largest non-banking companies or non-financial companies traded on the NASDAQ. And the NASDAQ is going to be a little bit more heavily tech-weighted because the S&P 500 does include those banking companies, and those companies are really big. So by eliminating those, the NASDAQ 100 gets a bit more tech exposure, although both of these indexes are going to be pretty tech heavy because the tech sector is so powerful right now. Now, if the past like minute or two sounded like a bunch of mumbo jumbo gobbledygook, didn't make a lot of sense to you, that's totally okay. I use some pretty specific words there that if you don't normally read Wall Street Bets or you're not reading investing articles or listening to these sorts of shows very regularly, you may not be familiar with. That's totally okay. I've got a really good analogy. I think it's a really good analogy that I've come up with for the comparison between what a stock is and what an ETF is and how they relate to each other. So a broadly diversified portfolio is kind of like a Hawaiian pizza, if you'll go with me for a sec. You've got lots of ingredients in your broadly diversified portfolio, lots of different shares and of companies and potentially ETFs. You've got bonds and different assets, lots of different sort of ingredients. And the reason for this is so that if one asset class, say the travel sector, absolutely tanks like it has during COVID, your whole portfolio isn't going to get sewered as a result. Now, just like this diversified portfolio, you'll also have lots of ingredients in a pizza. You've got the dough, you've got the cheese, you've got, if it's a Hawaiian pizza, you've got ham, pineapple, maybe some bacon, maybe some hot peppers if you're feeling spicy. Now, in this analogy, each of these ingredients is like the stock of an individual company. And a single slice of a pizza pie is like an ETF. Say you wanted some pizza, you could go out and buy all of those ingredients separately. But if you only want one slice, or you can only afford one slice, say you've only got $5 in your pocket, it might make more sense for you to go to the pizza shop, go to the restaurant, and just order a single slice from behind the counter. They warm it up for you, $4, you're good to go. You've got enough money for that. It may not make a lot of sense or even be feasible for you to go out and buy all of the individual ingredients to make a whole pizza pie if you can only afford one little section of it anyways. In this analogy, only being able to afford $5 for pizza, but wanting the whole flavor of that Hawaiian pizza is kind of what it's like to be a retail investor. If you're anything like me, you're not investing hundreds of thousands of dollars at a time or millions and millions of dollars at a time, making the market and performing these huge trades, right? You can't go out and buy 5,000 shares of Apple at once. That would be like $600,000. So in this sense, buying that ETF, which is like the slice of pizza, you only have to buy one selection of a certain type of asset. So for me, for example, I own the QQQ ETF, which tracks the NASDAQ 100, and I own the VFV ETF, which is a Canadian ETF that tracks the S&P 500. If I wanted to build this portfolio with individual stocks, just to do the S&P 500, I would have to go out, do the research, and individually buy shares from 500 different companies and weight it myself. By buying VFV, I'm able to do that with just a single purchase. If I have $1,000 to invest, instead of buying fractional shares of 500 different companies, I can just buy $1,000 worth of shares of VFV and boom, I'm done. It's super easy. And if you find an ETF that has a low management fee, then you're able to do this at a far smaller cost than it would be for you to pay the commission to your broker and end up buying all those individual stocks, and it wouldn't take you hours and hours and hours to do. It would be like a 30-second transaction, which is super convenient. Essentially, by buying ETFs, you're able to get a lot more diversity with a smaller amount of money than you would be able to achieve by buying individual stocks. At the same time, ETFs are less, because they're so diversified, they're less likely to have these huge price swings going straight up to the moon or tanking down. So you're going to have a bit more stability, right? You're going to ride the market as a whole rather than individual stocks. So for me personally, having invested a lot in VFV and in XQQ, Tesla has absolutely mooned over the past year. I think it's up like seven times, right? Up 700% or something crazy like that. I don't have individual shares of Tesla. I have a bit of exposure to Tesla because QQQ and VFE, well, VFE didn't historically hold Tesla. Now it does because Tesla was added to the S&P 500. But I had a bit of exposure through my QQQ shares because Tesla was and is in the NASDAQ 100. But I didn't have that whole exposure. If I had owned 100 shares of Tesla, I would have made a way, way, way larger profit than I would have by holding the shares of QQQ that I currently have. That being said, if Tesla absolutely crashes, I'm also not going to be so heavily exposed to that sort of fluctuation, and my portfolio isn't going to tank as a result. Really big tangent, all that to say, ETFs are like a slice of pizza, stocks are like the individual ingredients that make up that pizza or make up that slice, and by buying individual stocks, you might get more of that flavor that you want. You're going to get more exposure to a very specific asset, but buying ETFs, you're going to have a more diversified asset group, more diversified portfolio with just a simple one or two purchases of a couple different ETFs or just a single ETF even. And so stocks and ETFs are both traded on what's known as the stock exchange or the stock market. The stock market is pretty much a giant global marketplace that connects buyers and sellers, except instead of being like a flea market or something like that, where you're going to sell trinkets and all that and physical items, the stock market is used to sell securities. These securities can be stocks and ETFs like we've already discussed, and they can also be corporate bonds. One thing to note about the stock market as well is that you're buying from other individual investors, or it could be from larger organizations like investment firms, but you're not buying from the company itself that issued those shares. If I want to go out and buy a share of Amazon today, I'm not going to be buying it directly from the Amazon company. I'm buying it from somebody else, an individual investor or investment firm or something that has already bought these shares. It's like a secondary market. And so the price is actually set not by the company who's issuing shares originally, but it's set by supply and demand in this secondary market. You've got three main parts to this supply-demand system. To begin with, there's the number of shares in circulation, and this number remains relatively static. It's set by the company when they initially do their public offering. That's called an IPO. So an IPO is the first time that a company goes public, which means that they're making their shares publicly available to be bought and sold. And a public offering, it doesn't have to be just the IPO. There can be further public offerings. For instance, Air Canada is doing another public offering where they're putting out some more of their shares to the public to be bought and sold. But this isn't like an everyday thing. The company will only sell shares of itself when it wants to raise money for something. So in Air Canada's sense, right now they're trying to raise money to continue staying afloat. The second factor that determines the price of a share is the number of buyers trying to buy those assets. And the third factor is the number of people trying to sell that asset. Essentially, the absolute definition of this is if more people are trying to buy the asset than are trying to sell the asset, the cost of that stock or ETF is going to go up. If more people are trying to sell it than trying to buy it, the cost of that asset, the cost of the equity is going to go down. For example, recently over the past year, Tesla, like I mentioned in my previous example, mooned. And that was because a lot of people got excited about the Tesla company. There was a lot of hype built up around it. And a lot of people decided that they all wanted to buy Tesla. There's only so many shares of Tesla in circulation. And as a result, there are only so many people able to or willing to actually sell those shares. Because there was a huge demand for the shares and not a lot of supply, the cost of those shares went up. Kind of a more physical, tangible aspect. In the past few months, weightlifting equipment has gotten super expensive because lockdowns have closed all the gyms, and people on the secondary market like Kijiji or Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace, they have all realized we can capitalize on this by selling our old gym equipment at a markup because there's a huge demand and a very limited supply. So one of the big takeaways from this is to remember that when you do buy or sell an equity on the stock market, it's important to remember that you're not just arbitrarily selling it into the ether. Somebody is actually making the decision on the other end of that computer terminal. Somebody is making the decision to buy what you're selling or to sell what you're buying. It's not like a video game where the shopkeeper is just going to buy whatever you sell at whatever price. It's a real person actually buying something from you. It doesn't just vanish out of your account and turn magically into money. There's really an actual transaction happening. Someone somewhere is buying those shares from you or selling those shares to you. So stocks are kind of cool, and ETFs by extension are kind of cool because ETFs are normally made up of stocks, like I mentioned before. They're kind of cool because historically they have been the best performing asset class. And I'll leave a link in the show notes to show where I got this information from. So there's a lot of potential to really grow your money through ownership of stocks, because not only can they grow exponentially in value due to compounding interest, but they also can provide you with dividends. So even when they do go down, you're going to be able to receive a little bit of a cash payout every quarter or every month, depending on the company or on the ETF, that continues to buy you more shares or pay you out while you're just holding the company. It's important to remember that stocks and ETFs do come with underlying risks. If you're going to buy a security like a stock or an ETF, then you need to remember that you could lose your money through a market crash or if that company were to go bankrupt. A market crash doesn't guarantee that you'll lose money, but if you were to get scared and sell your shares of that ETF or of those stocks at a loss because you see the market's going down and you think it's going to go to zero, by selling, you're going to solidify that loss. Whereas if you hold, you haven't actually lost any money because it could still recover. That's why, in my opinion, if you're going to be successful in long-term investing, it takes a lot of discipline. And like the name of the podcast, it takes diamond hands. Now, what does diamond hands actually even mean? It means that when your theory is tested and when things start going wrong and when the market starts going down and you're holding shares of the market, when that all happens, you don't get scared and sell. Diamond hands means that you have a long-term conviction and a long-term thesis that the market as a whole or your position as a whole is going to go up and you're going to continue to grow your position. If you get scared when everything goes down and you start seeing that number in your account turn red and you decide to sell, trying to save yourself a little bit of a loss, and you're like, oh, I'll just buy it when it goes down a little more. That in my head, that's called paper hands. If the market starts going down, and this is super easy to say in a bull market, right? COVID tested it. COVID tested anybody who was in the market a little bit, because like I said last episode, I saw my portfolio go down by 30% in a month. And that was pretty hard to watch. But if you're able to go through that and instead of selling it, you hold it, or even better, you buy more shares when the market does go up again, if it goes up again, I can't predict the future, but in the case of COVID, it has returned and it's actually well beyond where it was before COVID, then you're going to end up in a super strong position, because not only did you not sell those shares at a loss, you continued to add to your position and you continued to buy in when everything was cheaper. It's like buying on sale. So like I said, I'm not a future teller. I can't tell what's going to happen 5 years from now, 10 years from now, and beyond into the future. But I do know that historically, stocks have gone up. Back during the Cold War, when it looked like the United States and the Soviet Union were about to nuke each other into oblivion, that didn't stop the market from going up. When 9/11 happened and there was a huge amount of turmoil in the United States and throughout the entire world, although in the short term the market suffered, stocks still went up. There have been massive amounts of human suffering and pain that have occurred, and I don't want to discount that. But in terms of investing, the market has continued to go up. I'm not saying that it's infallible. I'm not saying that it is 100% foolproof, and I cannot make any sort of guarantee. But as in the United States, the central banking system has essentially come out and said that they're going to keep interest rates low for the foreseeable future. They're printing a lot more money to try to stimulate the economy. All of this is adding to a massive amount of an injection of capital into the free markets in the United States. And as a result, I personally believe that this is going to lead to, one, a lot of inflation over the next decade or so, and two, as a result of this inflation, and as a result also of all this excess capital flooding into the markets, I think that this is going to result in a huge increase in share prices just across the board. So I can't pick an individual company. I can't predict the future, like I said, and that's probably the fifth time that I've said that in this episode. But this is just my personal opinion, is that as a result of all this inflation, share prices, real estate prices, any sort of asset it's going to trickle down and these prices are all going to grow. And so if everything is growing due to this inflation, because that money printer that the Fed's doing, that the Fed's got, is just like printing away and interest rates are staying low, that means that your regular savings account or your GIC or any sort of more secure way of saving your money or investing, the interest rates that you're able to get with that are all going down. For me, I have a high interest savings account as well that I use to save for short term stuff. And I keep getting emails from them saying, hey, we're sorry to inform you, but our interest rate is going down. When I first joined that bank, and when I first got that high interest savings account, the interest rate was 2.45% annually. Now, I think a year later, it's 1.1%. So it's gone down a massive amount. And that's because the central bank has lowered interest rates. And because of this, a lot of people are flooding out from these more secure high interest savings accounts and putting their money in mutual funds, in ETFs, and in the market. And as a result, that's also driving market prices up. I can't predict how long this is going to last for, but for me, I am very comfortable staying in the market, staying invested, because I believe that long term, these prices are going to continue to go up. The big takeaway is, if you own shares of a company or shares of an ETF, I just want you to remember that that's not just a 3 or 4 letter ticker symbol that you just Google this symbol and you see a number that goes up or goes down and has a little pretty red or green chart associated with it. If you own a stock or you own an ETF, you literally own shares of that company. By buying into companies that you believe in or ETFs that you believe in because they represent an index that you have faith in or you believe has long-term growth. And when I say believe in it, I don't mean like, I love you, like I love you, Apple. When I say you believe in a company, I just mean you think they make like great products. You think they have good business practices. You might think that they just have great long-term potential for growth, but it's more than you're just buying into the hype. I personally think that if you buy into a company, you should actually know and understand what they do, maybe. And by doing it that way, when the price does rise or fall, you'll be able to stick with your gut and have those diamond hands to hold when the price goes down. Because you know that, for instance, if you own shares of VFV like myself, you have confidence that the American economy as a whole will recover in the long term. If you have shares of Apple, you say, Apple's just got such a good product. I believe in Apple and I'm going to continue to hold these shares because even though they've gone down to $80 and my account value has halved, that's okay because I believe in Apple. I think they have a great long-term potential and I'm going to continue to buy more shares, or I'm going to continue to hold my shares instead of having paper hands and selling. That being said, if there's a company that shows very poor business practices all of a sudden, say there's a big scandal that happens like what happened with Luckin Coffee last year, where it turns out they forged a bunch of their numbers and falsified a bunch of data to make them look like they were more successful than they were, I would not argue to hold on to a company where it's just come to light that they have poor business practices. If you're buying shares of a company and something changes from your initial outlook or your initial opinion on them, that's different. You don't need to blindly hold. You don't need to blindly buy or blindly do anything. I think you should be making an educated decision. My point is, you shouldn't be 100%, you shouldn't be basing your decision to buy or sell a company just off of hype or what you read on Reddit or what you heard in the news. Do your own research, do your own due diligence, because at the end of the day, you're the one who's going to be held accountable for the decisions that you make when it comes to investing and when it comes to your financial future. So you need to be able to sleep at night with the decision that you made and with the companies that you're buying. If you're up all night because some dude on Reddit or some girl on Reddit recommended this company, but you don't really know what they did, but they're up 50% last week, so you're going to buy in while it's hot. If you're up all night because of this and it's causing you damage to your personal life, or it's stressing you out more than it should, I don't know that that's necessarily the right investment for you to make, because that at that point is not even investment. I'd say that's more speculation. So yeah, do your own research, because at the end of the day, you're going to be the one who has to deal with the decisions that you make. Okay, so I think that's the episode. Hopefully the audio quality has improved a little bit since the first one. I've done a little bit of, I wouldn't call it sound engineering, but I put a sheepskin rug up on the wall, stuck a bunch of pillows around, made a little, almost like a little pillow fort for the microphone to sit in to reduce the reverb in the room. So I think that has probably done a little bit to improve the audio quality here. I'm also super stoked because I'm looking at the podcast analytics and it's available on Spotify, available on iTunes podcasts, available on Stitcher. So I'm getting a little bit more outreach and I have people listening from outside of North America now. Already just one episode in, this is number two, but I've got people from Canada and the US, which are, I'm not gonna lie, mostly my family and friends, but also, there are people from Norway, New Zealand, the Czech Republic, and India, which is super rad. I would not have expected, and I really did not expect to have this sort of outreach or this sort of listenership already. So huge thanks to everybody who is listening and want to say hi to you guys, and I appreciate it. This week, we focused on what stocks and ETFs actually are. Still building up those basic building blocks of knowledge, putting a few investing tools in your toolbox. We also talked about how the stock market works. Remember, when you buy or sell, it's not just a magic algorithm that's putting this number into your account. It's an actual person on the other end of the internet who is selling you this stock or the ETF or whatever equity you're buying. Join me next week for episode 3 of the Diamond Hands podcast, Dividends, Drip, and why would you buy ETFs rather than just picking the good stocks? I've been your host, Goldie. I hope this has been enjoyable and educational, and thank you again for listening to episode 2 of the Diamond Hands podcast. Have a great week, stay safe, and stay healthy.